Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And we are back with another packed edition of Africa Link this Tuesday, April the 3rd. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Crispin Wakidale.
And I'm Wanjiko Mora in Bonn, Germany. Here are our main stories. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cancels a plan to relocate African migrants to the West.
He faced pressure from his own Likud party and right-wing coalition members. And the deal is also criticized because those who would be permitted to stay in the country would receive some kind of residency.
And as South Africa continues to mourn the loss of Winnie Mandela, we take a deeper look at the life of the controversial ex-wife of former President Nelson Mandela.
She would leave you feeling motivated and assured that things would change and that you, as a person facing this repression, had the power to help change that.
Stick around for those stories and do join the debate live on Facebook with your thoughts, comments and opinions. But first, let's hear what's happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. German prosecutors announced on Tuesday that they had asked a court to allow the extradition of ex-Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont to Spain, following his arrest late last month in northern Germany on a European arrest warrant. Spanish officials have charged Puigdemont with rebellion and embezzlement over his failed independence referendum bid, charges Puigdemont and his lawyers have appealed. German court spokesperson Wiebke Hoffner said, however, that Spain's extradition request is acceptable.
The Spanish authorities' request for extradition specifies the offense of rebellion and embezzlement of public funds. In our opinion, these offenses correspond to the German offenses of high treason and embezzlement.
Straftatbeständen des Hochverrats und der Untreue.
Puigdemont could face 25 years behind bars if found guilty. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has canceled a UN-brokered migrant relocation deal just hours after agreeing to send thousands of African migrants in Israel to Germany, Italy, and Canada. Netanyahu's decision to scrap the deal came after members from within his right-wing government complained, saying the agreement was bad for the country and didn't go far enough. There are an estimated 37,000 African migrants in Israel, most of them from Eritrea and Sudan. South Africans have been paying their respects to late anti-apartheid activist Winnie Mandela, who died peacefully Monday at the age of 81. A large group of people visited her house near Johannesburg on Tuesday, singing and praising her decades of defiance against white minority rule. South African opposition politician Julius Malema also paid his respects.
To the Mandela family, to the Madikizela family, and to the people of South Africa, including the ANC, we are saying we have lost a fearless fighter, a giant, a mother of the nation, a title which was bestowed on her by the people of South Africa.
Winnie Mandela was married to the first black South African president, Nelson Mandela, for 38 years. She is to receive a state funeral in mid-April. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Rights group Amnesty International announced Tuesday that it had found a mass grave in central Mali, where the country's military reported an increase in jihadist attacks in the region. Mali's military has been trying to stop extremism from spreading further in the West African nation, but rights groups have expressed concern over alleged abuses. Amnesty reported that residents identified six bodies found in the mass grave. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa made his first foreign trip outside Africa, meeting on Tuesday with Chinese President Xi Jinping in the capital, Beijing. The two leaders reportedly discussed trade and relations, with Xi saying he hopes to build on ties with Mnangagwa's newly elected government, which succeeded Robert Mugabe's 37-year rule. And now in sports, the first leg of the Champions League quarterfinals kicks off tonight, with German football club Bayern Munich facing Spanish club Sevilla and Italian club Juventus competing against Spanish club Real Madrid. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to Africa Link Live. I am Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn, Germany. Welcome to all those listening in live on our Facebook page. Emmanuel Awule listening live from Ghana. Our Sung Liner says hello. And Ebrima Saingas also says hi.
Right. And we get into our top story today. Dead deal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has cancelled a deal with the UNHCR that would have seen tens of thousands of African migrants being relocated to the West. The UN, on its part, has urged Israel to reconsider the decision.
Netanyahu stated on Monday that his country had struck a deal with countries like Germany, Italy, and Canada to take in the African migrants. But he later bowed to pressure from his own Likud party, which does not approve of the deal, and suspended it before completely scrapping it, as DW correspondent in Tel Aviv, Tanya Kramer, told me via Skype.
This morning, Prime Minister Netanyahu met with residents of South Tel Aviv. This is the area where most asylum seekers live and where there has been a lot of opposition to them staying there. And then later, the deal was cancelled all along. He said he was listening to the people there and that there were still, as he called, disadvantages of this agreement. But according to media reports here, he faced pressure from his own Likud party and right-wing coalition members like the Jewish Home Party. And several ministers and politicians here went out saying that such a deal would set a precedent in recognizing what is usually called here illegal migrants, or they're even called infiltrators, as refugees. And the deal is also criticized because those who would be permitted to stay in the country would receive some kind of residency.
Germany and Italy have said that they were not consulted on this deal. So what's going on here?
Well, I think this was further complicating the issue because both Germany and Italy said that they had not received any requests regarding taking in asylum seekers. And I think that further complicated the issue and also certainly caused some confusion with officials in those countries.
So what happens to the African migrants now?
They continue to live in a limbo with a lot of uncertainty. I talked to some refugees yesterday when the news broke in Tel Aviv that a deal was reached for resettlement. And all of them said they were really feeling relief because it was a very tense situation for them. But also some of them were saying, well, let's wait and see. There was a lot of skepticism what it actually means if the deal will go through. So for them now, I think it is the worst outcome because once again, they face deportation and their future in Israel remains uncertain.
And what is the UN's position on all of this?
We understand from the United Nations, mainly from UNHCR, that they urged Prime Minister Netanyahu to reconsider the decision to cancel the agreement. The United Nations have said that they see this agreement as a win-win agreement for Israel, for the people in need of asylum, and also for the international community. And they hope that Israel reconsider this decision very soon.
DW correspondent Tanya Kramer in Tel Aviv.
And we have been receiving lots of your comments on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
Nana Safo says, send the migrants home. That is back to Africa. And there's a question here from Sam Samuel who says, why suspend it? The deal, that is. Well, it's actually not been suspended, but scrapped altogether. There is no more deal.
Completely.
Right. Now, let's move on. And staying with the issue of migration, Germany's development minister Gerd Müller plans to ramp up a program for migrants who agree to return to their home countries voluntarily.
Müller, who is in charge of the program, told a German news agency DPA that the funds for the program should be drastically increased. But critics say that more money is not going to make the scheme more effective. From Berlin, DW's Daniel Pelz reports.
At present, Germany only spends 150 million euros on its voluntary return program. If Development Minister Gerd Müller gets his way, that amount could be increased to 500 million. The Development Ministry is in charge of the scheme, which offers advice on setting up a business and job training. In the first major speech of her new term, German Chancellor Angela Merkel had already stressed that the number of rejected asylum seekers should be reduced.
Wir wollen und wir werden auch in Zukunft denjenigen Schutz geben,
We will continue to give protection to all those who are in political or humanitarian emergencies. But that also means that all those who do not enjoy the right to protection have to leave our country, preferably through voluntary return programs, but also through forced deportations as a last resort.
Notfalls auch durch staatlich angeordnete Rückführung.
The German government also wants to step up forced deportations, but they are extremely expensive. They also often fail because the deportees go into hiding or fight the deportation orders in court. But critics say that the voluntary return scheme is also not helpful. Stefan Dünnwald is with the Bayerischer Flüchtlingsrat, a non-governmental organization that assists refugees.
We demand that people from Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria or Africa should be given the right to stay here legally, get vocational training, save money and then return home.
Geld ansparen können und dann zurückgehen.
Since November last year, the government has already offered bonus payments of up to 3,000 euros for every asylum seeker willing to go home voluntarily. But only some 4,500 people have taken up the offer until now. It therefore remains to be seen if the voluntary return program is going to be more effective.
That report by Daniel Peltz in Berlin.
And let's head back to Africa. South Africans are mourning the death of Winnie Madikizela Mandela, the former wife of anti-apartheid icon Nelson Mandela, and in her own right, a towering figure in that liberation struggle.
Madikizela Mandela died peacefully at a hospital in Johannesburg at the age of 81. Now, earlier I talked to Benita Van Eysen, a South African-born journalist who grew up in the townships of Cape Town, and she started by explaining why Madikizela Mandela was so popular.
She was a black woman in a predominantly black country who stood up to a repressive white minority government. She came to be widely regarded as an uncompromising fighter for the people of South Africa, but those who felt the awful brutality of the apartheid regime the most.
And in which ways was this manifested?
Well, there were awful, dark days where young people especially saw no hope of a future for themselves in this country run by a handful of white men. And what Winnie did, she often appeared in public. She would sort of leave you feeling motivated and assured that things would change and that you, as a person facing this repression, had the power to help change that. Gave a lot of people a lot of hope.
And at the same time, she also offended the white minority government to the point where she was in and out of jail on terrorism charges. How did these events shape her life?
Well, remember that she was a young mother with two toddlers, two little girls, when her husband and his comrades were thrown in jail for treason. She's known to have been tortured both physically and psychologically by white men in the years that Nelson Mandela was in jail, and he was in jail for a long time, as we know.
What do you as a South African say to critics who say, but she was not all a hero?
Whenever her name comes up, then the controversy comes with it. So she's been convicted of fraud over some insurance scam. She has this conviction for being an accessory in a case involving the kidnapping of four young boys in the township. I think in many cases, when it comes to what happened during the apartheid years, the absolute truth will probably never be known.
I was talking with Benita Van Eysen, a South African-born journalist who grew up in the townships of Cape Town.
Now, Wanjiku, on the story of Germany wanting to speed up the deportation of migrants, we have a comment from Pat Peters who says, Western countries must take in African migrants because they gain a lot from African natural resources. The West also built their countries with free labor from African slaves. The West cannot pay back enough for exploiting Africa and Africans.
And Pat Peters here raises the issue of repatriation, you know, of the colonial period and after as well.
That's true.
And we have other comments here on the German story as well. Tope Ajay says that is a good policy. Such immigrants may be empowered or trained in their own countries instead of allowing them to be parasites in their host communities.
Kelvin Jerry says, if European countries provide shelter and proper health services to immigrants, their number will keep rising. So keep those comments coming in on our Facebook page and debate with one another, and we'll read the comments as soon as we can. You're listening to Africa Link, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. And we are also live on Facebook. So join us there with your comments on the stories we are airing. And we will read some of the comments right here on Africa Link.
Coming up in this quarter of an hour, descendants of slaves seek recognition as Kenyans.
The problem that we have is identification card. You cannot get that document by saying that you are from Nyasa, Migindo, Munyamwezi. You'll be told that in Kenya we don't have such tribes.
Don't miss out on that interesting historical story. And we shall also take you to the Gambia, where some two young brothers have come up with a business idea to stem the flow of migration. Plus, want a EU passport? Apparently, all you need to have is lots of cash.
Plenty there to look forward to, but let's begin with some African history. Slave trade officially ended in 1807, but the scars of this inhumane practice are still visible in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa. Descendants of slaves who were taken from Malawi, Zambia, Tanzania, and Congo were once settled in Freetown after being rescued from Arab slave traders by the British Royal Navy.
But even though they have lived for more than a century in Kenya, they are still not recognized as Kenyans. Diana Wanyonyi met up with one descendant of the freed slave and sent us this report.
It's 9:30 in the morning. One of the Price Haywood's daughter is cleaning the utensils outside after the family had breakfast. 74 years old Haywood is basking under a tree in his homestead in Freetown, located in the northern part of Kenya's coastal city, Mombasa. Haywood is a fourth generation of slaves. This means his great-great-great-great-grandfather was one of the slaves who was settled here. Haywood still looks masculine and full of energy. He smiles when I ask him to give me a brief history of his family.
They were captured in the interior of Tanzania, Malawi, southern Rhodesia, and northern Rhodesia, and they were taken to Zanzibar to be sold. Mombasa was a route for them to pass.
Mombasa ilikuwa ni port moja ya kupita.
After being rescued by the British Royal Navy from Arab slave traders off the Indian Ocean, the freed captives were then settled at Freetown in Mombasa, a name given to the settlement after Sir Bartle Frere, who abolished the Zanzibar slave trade.
Freetown settlement here in Popatikan.
When Freetown settlement was bought, forced slaves who were taken to India were thought on technical work as missionary, medicine, teachers, were brought back and they joined other slaves where they taught them on medicine, building of industry, teaching them languages. Some went as far as Kampala.
Despite the fact that they have intermarried and lived in Kenya for many years, Haywood and his fellow descendants of freed slaves are not officially recognized by the Kenyan government as one of the more than 40 ethnic groups that make up Kenya. 83-year-old Frederick Uledi explains.
The problem that we have is identification card. You cannot get that document by saying that you are from Nyasa, Migindo, Munyamwezi. You'll be told that in Kenya we don't have such tribes. During census, we are identified as others. People who are not known by Freetown is not known.
At his age of 74, Price Haywood always go to the cyber cafe to access information on internet concerning slaves. He prints the information and binds it as a book for his next generation.
Kitabu hiki nimekichukua na nimekitafuta.
I have taken and searched this book so that I may know more about Freer Town history, so that I can educate youth on how our history was. Until today, I still go online to look for books with the history of Freer Town or the Battle Freer Agreement on Slave Trade, so that when the time comes for us to fight for our rights, we could have reference of books on what happened.
In 2014, Amir Thoya, former member of Parliament Mombasa County, tabled in Parliament the issue of people from Freer Town and the need for them to be compensated by the British government for human rights violation and for the Kenyan government to recognize them. When the bill was tabled, some parliamentarians toured Freer Town to collect data. The bill is yet to be passed in the Parliament.
Diana Wanyonyi reporting in Mombasa.
This story is not only historical, it's literally a perfect example of how the internet can be used to draw dots of one's historical background.
That's true. And it's quite interesting also in the sense that it's the same like going to ask an African-American in the U.S., whether he has any link to a country in Africa. I'm sure most of these young ones, they have no clue about where their forefathers' ancestors came from.
Not at all.
Yeah, it's the same thing like these people in Freer Town.
Yeah, and they should be reconsidered as Kenyans, seeing that they have lived in this country for centuries. This is the only land they know. And it's a question that we actually posed on our DW Facebook page, that's DW Africa. What makes one a citizen? Is it your ethnic group? Is it the fact that you're in a geographical location? What makes one a citizen?
A very interesting question. So just go to Facebook, DW Africa, and leave us your comments.
Africa on the move.
Now, we've all had numerous stories about African migrants risking their lives to cross the Mediterranean into Europe. But what about those trying to stop this flow of young people?
Well, two young Gambians have started a beverage company in the hope that it will deter would-be migrants by offering them employment. They are also keen on using locally produced products such as hibiscus, baobab, ginger and lemon to promote farmers. But as Omar Wali reports from the ongoing 12th edition of Gambia's International Trade Fair in Banjul, this business venture is not without challenges.
I'm at the urban farmer's store at the trade fair. The company we started a few months ago was set up by two brothers, Kemo Bojeng and Alhaji Seku Bojeng. Their aim is to add value to local Gambian fruits by producing four different types of juice, namely wonjo hibiscus flower, ginger, lemon and baobab. Kemo Bojeng explains what inspired them to start the business.
When we saw that most guys were coming back from Libya, we wanted to start something that they would feel part of and see that they're one of us. What we were trying to do is getting them to come on board where we will be able to employ them, and then with time, they could be shareholders.
A 500 milliliter bottle cost 30 Gambian dollars. That is less than $1. According to Kemo, their business is different in that it seeks to give Gambians a chance in producing and consuming a homemade product. But what about a profit?
At the moment, our goal is not about making money. What we are trying to do is make Gambia healthy and make Gambians healthy and empowering young people. So this is why we are not considering the profit as of now, because looking at it, the bottle alone is really expensive. You know, the bottle alone, because Gambia doesn't produce bottles, so we have to import them. The workers, we have to pay for their labor, and we are trying as much as possible to pay them above the global $2 rate above poverty line payment.
There is a common belief among Gambians that they don't patronize locally made products. I asked some of them what they make of the urban farmers' beverages.
I think it is a very good initiative for young people to come up together and set up something. If you look at the problems in Africa, most of it has to do with youth unemployment. And definitely we cannot put all of these issues on the government because they cannot do it alone. So the fact that these young people decided to come together and set up their own business is a good initiative. Myself, I had the opportunity to try some of their products, and they're very good, and they are something that I would like to recommend to people.
Well, I tested two of their products and I found them very, very, very interesting and good also because they are made from natural fruits. And these are the kind of investments we like Gambians to venture into. So I wouldn't miss the opportunity to try it again. The only problem is it's a bit far from, you know, where I live. But if I have it closer to any supermarket, because every now and then I go to supermarkets to buy fruit juice or whatsoever. But if I have it close to me, I would be buying it every now and then.
Business is slowly picking up for Bojang Brothers. As Kemo told me, the sky is the limit for the two young entrepreneurs.
Even businesses have started patronizing us because we have two people that are retailing it at the moment.
But to become successful, they have to overcome some of the challenges. One of them being the acute shortage of electricity supply and the tough competition from the bigger juice producers in the Gambia.
That report was compiled by Omar Wali in Bajul.
And comments coming in live on our Facebook page. Omar Bob says, happy to hear from my country people, the Gambia.
And Ibrahim Nuhu says, we are not taking advantage of what we have as Africans. As developing nations, we must take advantage of the youth.
Keep those comments coming in and we'll read them as soon as we can.
Focus Europe.
Think you can't get an EU passport except through marriage, birth or working here? Think again. European Union passports are up for sale to rich outsiders who wouldn't be able to enter the EU in any other way. From Brussels, Terry Schulz reports those EU governments who sell the so-called golden visas are accused of ignoring applicants' backgrounds and apparently Brussels is turning a blind eye too. Take a listen.
If government records are to be believed, scores of Russian millionaires are building new lives in the European Union as proud Maltese citizens, some having recorded their latest abodes as abandoned gas stations or garages. Blogger Manuel Delia has tried to drop in on a few of his new compatriots at their official addresses, but they never seem to be home. Malta is among those EU governments which are flat-out selling passports to anyone who can afford them. And in many cases, rather than hiding the practice, the governments actually market it with golden visa expos. Delia is outraged and thinks other people should be too.
It's an uncontrolled backdoor to Europe, and it's institutionalized fraud. In theory, there's supposed to be scrutiny. There's supposed to be due diligence. The law, however, is very clear. If a terrorist comes here, if a criminal comes here, the government has the right to give them a passport. There's no problem with that.
The European Commission, the EC, doesn't seem to see the matter as particularly worrying. Asked this month about the proliferation of the practice, EC spokesman Christian Wiegand simply reiterated the rules and said the Commission is watching.
Principles laid down in international law require the existence of a genuine link between the applicant and the country or its nationals. So as national citizenship is the precondition for the EU citizenship and the entry of treaty rights, the Commission is closely monitoring the application of investor schemes granting national citizenship in member states.
As for genuine ties to European countries, Delia explains what the process of becoming Maltese now looks like.
They just fly in the country, they drive to the passport office, sign a few papers, fly back out, and we never see them again.
With this popular new export, Malta has been able to go from national deficit to surplus in just a couple of years. But it's not the only one. Cyprus is another quick path to Europe for the well-heeled, and some of its new citizens are getting serious scrutiny from outside the country, if not inside. Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska became a Cypriot last year. His name has been linked most recently with the U.S. investigation into President Donald Trump's ties to Russia. With all the concern about who's getting into the EU's Schengen system of visa-free travel via migration routes, Rachel Owens of the anti-corruption NGO Global Witness says she's appalled authorities seem to be unconcerned about what she calls a serious security risk.
The cousin of the Syrian dictator is able to get access to an EU passport despite being on the US sanctions list. The EU's core values of security, freedom of movement are at risk through these schemes.
Global Witness has presented a list of recommendations to the EC, demanding more checks on applicants and their money in this billion-dollar industry.
DW correspondent Terry Scholes reporting.
And we are looking at DW Africa Facebook page, and we know who is there. Comments are streaming in. Maxi Say says, wow, my first time listening to your program. Glad to hear from my country of origin, the Gambia.
And Omar Bob says, keep it up, Bojang Ba, mentioning the two brothers who started this business of beverages in the Gambia.
And this all in a bid to stop migration. And Ba Pulo says, Africa has more young people than any other continent in the world. With that, if African leaders are not making use of their young generation, then other countries will definitely do that.
And last one here from Koi says, Europe owes African people $100 zillion. $100 zillion, that's it. For half a millennia of slavery and colonialism.
How many zeros are in a zero?
I have
zillion?
No idea. Don't ask me. I guess we have to ask Koi to give us the answer to that. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Africa Link today, and we'll meet tomorrow. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Onjiko Mwaura. Bye for now.